This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 27th of January, 2017. And a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The Hampshire Chronicle extracts we will be reading for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. First, two or three of our regular notices. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. And just a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And here's another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick on the box, you may find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording, which are listed in date order you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent, first on the list. And on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers are Richard Martin.
Hello.
Claire Porter.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I am Maria Head, your presenter this week, and standing in for Ros Lydiard. And so, on to the news. The main headlines this week are Silver Hill returns, Council's new leader in cabinet shake-up, facelift plans for Silver Hill. Richard, can you give us the first headline story, please?
I can, and surprise, surprise, it's Silver Hill Returns. A major attempt to get new ideas from the public for the Silver Hill redevelopment will be launched next month. The City Council is attempting to resurrect the redevelopment following its collapse last year. JTP architects have been hired to engage with the public. The launch will be next month, then a weekend in late March will be set aside for workshops and sessions for people to put forward their ideas, as well as an exhibition. A roadshow will be held in Alsford and Bishop's Waltham, the train station and Sunday market, to ensure as many people as possible are involved. Organisations such as the Cathedral will also be consulted. Charles Campion, a director of JTP Architects, said it was vital to engage with the public and the community, which will feed into the new supplementary planning document for the area. Mr. Campion told councillors on the Central Winchester Regeneration Information Policy Group about his firm's work. It's about life, about understanding the DNA of a place. Silver Hill, a £150 million redevelopment involving flats and shops, was hugely controversial, sparking major demonstrations, including a 1,000-person march in 2015. JTP will launch the exercise on February the 10th. The roadshow will be the week beginning March. Community planning weekend will be March 24th to 25th. JTP is due to report back on April the 4th to the 5th. A similar consultation was held for Silver Hill just after the millennium by Thornfield Properties. Many of the ideas popular with the public, such as a youth centre and arts facilities, fell by the wayside, squeezed out by commercial pressures that saw the final scheme largely comprise just shops, flats and parking. The IPG also heard the latest on buses and parking. Andy Hickman said the City and City Council the City and County Council were working on data collection to understand how people move around the city and how the site is accessed and used. The county is investing in new cameras and monitoring equipment. Mr. Hickman said a lot of detailed work had been done for the first Silver Hill scheme, so it was unnecessary to duplicate it. On buses, Councillor Rose Burns spoke of a new hub at the train station. But Mr. Hickman said there were 640 bus departures daily from the bus station, mostly unsubsidised commercial services, so nothing should be done to harm that viability. Reports are also being done on flooding risk, archaeology and retail. The IPG next meets on February the 7th, when it will hear from Alan Lovell of the Hampshire Cultural Trust. It is open to the public to attend.
Council's new leader in Cabinet shake-up. The new leader of Winchester City Council has announced her Cabinet following a reshuffle. The Cabinet has met for the first time since Councillor Caroline Horrell was elected. Councillor Horrell, who will also remain the portfolio holder for housing, thanked former leader Stephen Godfrey for his leadership, as well as outgoing Cabinet members James Burns and Frank Pearson. Excuse me. She said, "I hope it will be enjoyable and we look forward to working with all the officers on some important work for the district." She will be working with Chief Executive Laura Taylor, who replaced Simon Eden. Four Cabinet members retain their current portfolios. These include Deputy Leader Victoria Weston for Built Environment, Rob Humby for Business Partnership, and Councillor Stephen Miller for Estates. Former Leader Stephen Godfrey also stays on for Finance. As reported, Councillor Godfrey said that he felt it was the right time to leave the role after 17 months. He cited further pressures and obligations coming his way and felt he wanted to spend more time with his family. New additions are Guy Ashton, who takes on professional services, and Lisa Griffiths for the Health and Wellbeing portfolio. Jan Warwick also returns to the Cabinet for Environment. It is thought this is the first time that four members of the Cabinet have been women.
We return to Silver Hill. Facelift plans for Silver Hill. Winchester civic chiefs are breathing new life into the rundown Silver Hill area. Critics might argue that it was the City Council that caused the area to run down in the first place. Councillors heard that the area is being rejuvenated following the collapse of the Silver Hill redevelopment last year. The City Council, now the main landowner following compulsory purchase, is revamping the area because a new redevelopment scheme is again years away. Kevin Warren, head of estates at the council, told the Central Winchester Regeneration Informal Policy Group of a number of improvements. The former sorting office had been acquired from Royal Mail and Coitbury House was being renovated and a new tenant was being lined up. The offices above Poundland on Middlebrook Street were also set to be let after standing empty for years. Asbestos has all been removed. All the tenants in King's Walk have now been offered five-year leases. New tenants have moved into Middlebrook Street, such as Molly's Den, Bits and Pieces, and the Sweet Ice Cream Lounge. New signs will be installed to improve footfall, said Mr. Warren. The old fountain base will be removed and the area repaved, including the removal of the steps in favour of slopes. Mr. Warren said the new activity would bring in £420,000 income this year. Under Silver Hill, the whole area would have been knocked down by now, or imminently. The demolition of the Friarsgate multi-storey car park is going well, said Mr. Warren, and was due to end on January the 31st. Then the site would be reopened at the end of April as a 70-space car park with four disabled spaces and two electric charging points and possibly two car share spaces. He praised the contractor as the best he had worked with. There had been no complaints from the public, despite the nearest homes only being 30 yards away across Friarsgate. The work was being done by robots and dust was dampened down by a fine spray. The contractors have removed 2,500 tonnes of crushed concrete and 800 tonnes of rusty steel, said Mr. Warren.
Thank you, everyone. And now we have the death notices, which will be followed by Christian comment from Richard. Betteridge, Doris, died peacefully at home on the 19th of January, aged 100. Hat, Nellie, known as Auntie Nell, died peacefully in hospital on the 19th of January, aged 89. Lawson Clark Chalmers, Elizabeth, died peacefully on the 11th of January, aged 86. Mott, June Margaret, passed away peacefully on the 18th of January, aged 88. Sultana, Salvatore, known as Sam, late of IBM Hursley, passed away peacefully on the 16th of January, aged 59, after a long illness. Watts, Nancy Margaret, passed away peacefully at Flower Down Care Home, aged 88. And Christian comment is contributed this week by Mary Gray. Thank you, Richard.
And it's entitled The Boy from the Lake. We don't know at what point Jesus left Nazareth for the Sea of Galilee, but at a certain time this becomes the base for his three-year ministry, at least until he set his face for Jerusalem, Luke 9:50. I'm writing this piece in the state of Rajasthan, northwest India, by another lake, Lake Pichola. I watch a very biblical scene as small boats ply their way across the lake. This is exactly what Jesus and his disciples did after he called them to follow him. Why did he choose Capernaum and the Sea of Galilee as his base? Perhaps because of the ease of crossing and recrossing its waters to connect with the villages on each side? It's interesting that he begins his ministry with the fisher folk, before those working in the fields, not forgetting Matthew, the tax collector, Simon the zealot, and Judas, who both belonged to two political parties. The lakeside of Galilee is where he calls his disciples and opts to stay close to the realities of people's lives. These were not easy days for fisher folk, so he fulfills Isaiah's prophecies. In the days to come, he will confer glory on the way of the sea, on the far side of Jordan, province of the nations. The people that walked in darkness have seen a great light, and those that lived in a land of deep shadow, a light has shone. Isaiah chapter 8, verse 24. It was from the realities of the lives of fisher folk that Jesus learnt of the harshness of life, of the dangers and fears that arose from storms, of the sickness and early deaths of the people of its shores, of the poverty that meant hunger, thirst, and the humiliation of unemployment, of the lack of rainfall and subsequent failure of crops, bringing the widespread hunger. And most of all, he learnt of the cruelty of the Roman regime, combined with the oppression of King Herod, that kept people's lives in misery. How did the words of Isaiah strike him as he listened in the synagogue? He could identify easily with the idea that his people walked in darkness, but would he realise that he himself was to be the light that shone? The key to this seems to be that Jesus stayed close to the people and responded to their cries. We do not find an incident where he chose not to respond, rather that each encounter provided him with a beacon light as to what God expected of him. And perhaps that is a clue as to what God expects of us, that we listen, reflect and respond to whatever experiences come our way, wanted or unwanted. Jesus never returned to the lake. I imagine he cherished the memories of these early experiences with the Galilean fisher folk. They have given us a shining example of what it means to leave everything and follow Jesus.
And now time for letters to the editor. This week we have 12 letters for you on wide-ranging subjects. Claire, can you start us off with the first letter, please?
One is headed, Don't Deny Crisis. So the NHS is in crisis, and this should not be denied by government. Another week of political dogfights with inept, perhaps intentionally so, pronouncements from Hunt set against asinine opportunistic comment from Corbyn. And then the blame game started with the government's aggressive threats to GPs for not opening when patients need them and forcing further inappropriate visitors to A&E. The NHS's myriad problems cannot be fixed piecemeal. It needs to be depoliticised and a cross-party team rapidly established to examine and make radical change, inter alia, to the virtuous circle of GP care, social care and A&E and wider hospital care. We must not lose the essence of the NHS and the concept of care for all. But clearly radical structural change is needed in parallel with increased targeted funding and performance improvement in service organisation and procurement especially. Five members of my family work in frontline roles in the NHS and daily see the pressures on an already creaking system and feel the stress of delivering a safe, caring and professional service to patients in spite of the current infrastructure. And we have first-hand experience of one of the key problem issues, bed blocking. Our 97-year-old relative had a stroke and was hospitalised, treated successfully, and then sent for rehabilitation. But during this process, he spent too many days after being declared medically fit in a hospital and then rehab bed. He was desperate to go home and return to independent living. But due to the dislocation between hospital, GP and social services, many days were wasted when another patient could have been accommodated. Extrapolate this example to the wider ageing population and the size of just one problem is obvious. The public is bored with political claim and counterclaim, yet desperate for a fix to the problem and, importantly, perhaps are now prepared to pay more tax in return for credible, radical change and parallel increased funding by the corporates. So, government, be honest. Accept there is a crisis. Set up a cross-party team to gain consensus. Treat the public as adults with clear information on the size of the problem, the cost, and who will bear it. Stop the blame game and find a political solution to the NHS and cherish as a nation. And that was written by John M.G. Seal of Foxcombe Close.
The next letter is entitled Stop Mudslinging. Sir, S.B. Cook's letter, Chronicle, January the 19th, raises questions about the disclosure of possible interests of councillors. Pot, kettle, black springs to mind. Is this the same former councillor Simon Cook, first a member and then chairman of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, who firmly rubbished, indeed quashed, questioning about financial irregularities and the potentially unlawful contractual arrangements relating to the River Park Leisure Centre? Is this the same former Winchester City Council officer Simon Cook, who was chief leisure officer with responsibility for sports and leisure provision when the contractual relationship was put in place with DC Leisure, now Places for People, back in the 1990s? The City Council was found to have acted unlawfully in contravention of procurement regulations in relation to Silver Hill. Similarly, there are many unanswered questions about the operator's contract and the mismanagement of River Park. Yet all the council has done hitherto is to display a complete lack of concern, which appears to some to amount to a cover-up. In all the meetings I attended, I cannot recall any senior councillor, including Simon Cook, ever showing the slightest disquiet over the possibility that the council, through its officers, had acted unlawfully or had failed properly to manage the leisure centre contract. Rather than indulging in continued mudslinging and cheap shots at individual councillors, the offering of suggestions as to how the council can clean up its act and restore public confidence may result in some constructive action. The new leader and chief executive need to take hold, and soon. One way to do this is to ensure that a proper, open and transparent system of governance is put in place in order to resolve past issues and to ensure positive outcomes for the sake of Winchester City and district's residents and visitors. The letter is written by Martin Wilson, The Square, Winchester.
I have a letter from Peter Rees, the former leader of the Winchester City Council Labour Group, entitled Pollution Facts, and facts is in inverted commas. Sir, Andrew Beadle comments on my choice of language, Chronicle Letters, January the 5th. Let's refresh the facts about the illegal levels of city air pollution and our need for clean air. The Conservative Party, of which he is a member, has consistently reneged on promises to close inner-city car parks made during my tenure as City Councillor and Labour Group Leader. The City Council is now condoning, ignoring and colluding in the extremely high levels of toxicity causing the pollution we are all affected by. By failing to take adequate and emphatic measures to stop this, the Council is acting illegally. As an elected member, Councillor Burns is patently not balancing his collective responsibility for the health and well-being of local people with economic prosperity. The debate has been solely focused around trading. Yet despite how vigorous and widespread toxic air pollution has become, the Conservative-controlled Council do nothing to alleviate the silent gassing of its citizens. He's shown a completely dismissive and disdainful attitude towards the proven threat to public health through his partisan alliance with the Business Improvement District and their pressuring to have even more cars swamp and pollute the city. A vibrant, successful local economy is not created by creating traffic jams, building even more car parks, downplaying and underfunding public transport and park and ride. It is built on the civic safeguarding of the health of all, residents, workers and visitors. Fewer cars in the centre mean higher footfall, easier access to public transport, more people populating shops, cafes, restaurants, pedestrianised streets who are not subjected to deadly toxic fumes. I make absolutely no apology for my use of language, as I don't expect Andrew Beadle to apologise for the poverty and austerity his Conservative government has created, or the Conservative failing to discharge their responsibility for better air quality in the city they control. In Winchester, over 50 people will die each year due to toxic air pollution-related chest and lung conditions. This is a lot of avoidable grief and emotion, but I won't hold my breath for the Conservatives to act in compassionate public interests. Peter Way, Winchester.
This letter from David Selby is headed Give Tax Choice. What with your item about the police resisting further financial cuts, the chaos in the NHS because local councils cannot fund social care adequately, the increase in potholes, and the list goes on. I would vote immediately to scrap police commissioners and put the money back into the police. In general terms, I would hope that Hampshire County Council would follow Conservative-led Surrey in putting a big increase in council tax to the public in a referendum. The whole purpose of taxation is to provide services for the common good. It is not a form of robbery effected against the person. I personally would prefer a small increase in income tax, the fairest kind of taxation yet devised, But failing that, I would vote in favour of increasing council tax. And if it gets defeated, we clearly know what kind of society people would choose to live in. David Selby, a pensioner, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
The next letter is entitled Clearing the Paths. Sir, many thanks for printing my letter on the state of our urban footpaths in your edition on January the 19th. As a courtesy, I copied my letter to the local councillors for a week at the same time as I sent it to you. Two of them quickly acknowledged it, and within a few days, two workmen were scraping away at the frozen mud in Love Lane. I'm sure that the prompt response had nothing to do with your publishing my letter, .. Your readers may not know, I didn't, that there is a way of reporting minor problems like this on the Winchester City Council website. As the councillors explained to me, the Report a Problem app on the website is the starting point. For those of you with computers, I'm just going to give you a couple of links. The combination of www.winchester.gov.uk/report and www.hants.gov.uk/transport/road maintenance/road problems puts requests straight into the council systems and solves most problems. The website www.fixmystreet.com is also useful if it's not clear who's responsible. Whether this leads to action or not, I don't know. This is from Angie Wilkinson, Wesley Close in Wick.
This from Robert Barnes, Addicted to Cars. Sir Jonathan Greatrix, Chronicle Letters, January 19, proposed a number of sensible ways to reduce pollution by improving traffic flow through Winchester, to which I can add, remove the three sets of pedestrian-operated buttons on lights in north walls and replace them with timed pedestrian crossing stop-go countdown indicators synchronised to the lights at the road junctions, as in American cities. Do the same for the three sets of lights in Romsey Road, and as he suggests, synchronise the three sets to improve flow. Introduce a bylaw to prosecute jaywalkers who ignore the pedestrian stop lights. Bendy buses would increase congestion in Winchester's narrow streets. The new King's buses have low emission engines and provide a good service, unless stuck in the congestion when timetables become meaningless. During and after World War II, road fuel was rationed with coupons, and again in 1956 after Suez. The removal of rationing coincided with a major reduction in public transport in about 1950, in particular by the removal of trams in London and Southampton. Then in 1964, the railway network was drastically reduced after Beechring's report. In Stockbridge, for example, young apprentices had to buy bangers to get to work in Andover and Southampton when the Spratt and Winkle line closed. A near useless bus service was substituted. The overall result was a rapid increase in movement by car, with a consequent change in national culture when we realised the additional advantages they provided for holidays, etc. We became heavily addicted. It will be very difficult, if impossible, in this democratic country to go cold turkey, at least in towns and cities, without drastic methods to reduce their use. Our city council must try harder. Robert Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Chilbolton Avenue, Winchester.
This letter from Adam Clark Williams has been headed Fight College Plans. Peter Simmons College has now made public its latest plans for a new arts building on land at the top of Cranworth Road. The plans are a lightly revised version of the scheme which provoked such uproar a year ago. Yet an application for permission is imminent. The principal and the vice principal both say they would prefer the new building to go elsewhere, on a site closer to the core of the college, near Falkland's Lodge. The college tells the residents that it wants to work with us. In the light of that spirit of cooperation, we are asking them to explain, in detail, to the city planners why another site would be better for the good operation of the college, and environmentally better as well. At the moment, the city planners appear to care less for the actual community in this area and the impact on them than they do for their somewhat abstract notion of land that is suitable for development. Is it really the case that just because there was once a small open-air swimming pool on the Cranworth Road site, the land is considered the perfect place to plonk a large three-storey modern building a few yards across the road from people's homes and gardens? We don't think so. We appeal to all our councillors to fight the new application, to reject it, and to demand something better for the college and its neighbours. Adam Clark-Williams, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
We return to the subject of pollution in this letter, entitled Ignoring the Facts. The replies to my letter, chronicled January the 12th, are as expected. With this letter, I have submitted the air quality data for when I first became a Winchester City Councillor. The pollution starts to rise about 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. and fall 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., the time buses start and finish. When I questioned this, no answer was given. They simply ignored the data. 10 years ago, because I was fed up with seeing children getting a faceful of bus exhaust and the obvious danger of mixing them with traffic, I asked why buses ran through the lower high street. Answer: the bus stop outside Sainsbury's was convenient. Last year, I embarrassed the council by asking why inefficient buses of 15 years and older were still running around Winchester. No answer. But suddenly, after it was announced by the bus operators that 20 new efficient buses would be introduced. Funny that. More parking means more cars, is true in one respect. But not enough leads to more traffic circulating trying to find a parking place. Causing pollution is also true, as seen in Winchester, and could be detrimental to the economy of Winchester. I am, and never was, against park and ride, nor more pedestrian areas, but you cannot have buses running around nearly empty. I suggested they use smaller buses or taxis with people carriers during non-peak times. But the reply was, well, there was no reply. As for Donald Trump, it's true, I do not exactly know what he will do once in office. But I do know he, like most businessmen, deals in facts or goes bust. After all, has he not said that US policy in the Middle East, supported by the UK, caused the rise of Islamic State and terrorists, a fact ignored by elitists? Have you heard this being discussed in our press or by our elitist politicians? No. Ignored. You cannot fix a problem if you ignore facts and data. This from Malcolm Wright, Goldfinch Way, South Wadston.
Well, Felicity Carter asks, who's to help us? So your correspondent James Anderson made first-class points about our modern democracy, Chronicle Letters, January the 5th. I noted his point that ordinary voters care little if their life is good, but it changes if they become fodder for the ambitions of politicians. Recently, I attended a meeting of Eastleigh Borough Council, at which there was a considerable representation of protesters against further development near Fair Oak. Those speaking made many cogent and compelling environmental points against the development. They were heard by the councillors with what appeared to be a certain amount of insouciance and indifference. In a way, there was a good reason for this, as many of the speakers were citizens of the neighbouring Winchester City Council. The differences in attitude to the subject area is striking. A glance at the web pages of various Eastleigh councillors shows that, whilst nominally Liberal Democrats, and thus the most environmentally conscious national party. Their interests show a strong bias towards urbanisation and, for example, the soulless acres of dated retail and unused car parking at Hedge End. As the click-and-collect revolution gains pace, these spaces will become as out of date as the city centres they replaced. The question, therefore, is where is the democratic accountability when one body of councillors can make a decision that directly affects the lives of citizens in a neighbouring council area? To whom can those objectors turn? Their own council? The county council? Or the national government? None of whom included this precise proposal in their manifestos. Lister Carter, Ashton Lane, Bishops Waltham.
This letter, headed Pedestrians' Pain this time, and is written by Kate McIntosh. I have now checked out the veracity of your excellent article, January the 12th, on the appalling provision for pedestrians attempting to access Winchester Rail Station via the West car park. It is indeed a nightmare experience, and that was during the day. I counted 8 joggles, each entailing 4 90-degree turns in the route, including 2 zebra crossings. How the partially sighted, the blind, or those in wheelchairs are intended to negotiate this obstacle course is a mystery. It beggars belief that Winchester City Council should have a walking strategy document endorsed by their council and Hampshire County, which should therefore be embedded in all planning considerations, and yet officers totally failed to hold a single liaison meeting with Network Rail to discuss access for pedestrians through this route. They could have made the obvious point that a better alternative, safer and more direct, exists along the northern boundary of the site, above the tree-lined bank. It is argued that Network Rail is exempt from planning control, but the website https://article://120090119/general/permitted-parts/3-3-33-Q/DCP-section-434. I beg your pardon for all that, but it is true. Seems to suggest that a multi-story provision is not permitted unless wholly within an existing railway station. This has never been tested at law. Perhaps it is time that it was, as the uglification of our railway stations spreads like a cancerous growth across the country. And that was written by Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terraced, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Turning Nasty. The key rationale for the European Union's founding alliance, the European Coal and Steel Community in 1951, was to, quote, make war not only unthinkable, but materially impossible, unquote. The point of creating a supranational institution was to prevent individual nation states from going to war over scarce resources and perpetuating the slaughter that Europe had suffered every one or two generations for more than 1,000 years. It is a tragedy that Britain is willing to sacrifice such a noble vision on the altar of materialism, nationalism, and hostility to migrants and refugees. That our supposedly moderate Chancellor now thinks he can cow Europe into submission by threatening to make Britain an offshore tax haven if it doesn't kowtow to our demands shows a total lack of comprehension of the ideals beyond trade, that bind the countries of Europe together. Any swift trade deal with Trump's USA is likely to be, quote, TTIP on steroids, unquote, in which our cattle are going to be force-fed along with GM maize as European environmental standards are rapidly dismantled in the face of intense US corporate lobbying. What will stop the NHS going the way of Obamacare? We still have time to challenge this extreme ideology and prevent what the PM called the Nasty Party, turning Britain into the Nasty Country. This from Paul Williams, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And finally, this from the aforementioned Jonathan Greatrix. Let City Evolve. Sir, re-front page City Bar and Cafe Saturation Fears, Chronicle January 12. By page 5, I hit the first cafe closure, and by page 17, I read about the closure of Gormless Pizza, Fishtail, and maybe Maison Blanc. Others have failed in recent months. The fact is, it's about supply and demand. Winchester Market is full of food stands, which it never used to be. Demand. Not long ago, the High Street was full of buildings, societies, banks and phone shops, which wasn't very sexy. Councillor Ian Tait claims Maison Blanc was not as good as it should have been. Does he mean poor service, shoddy product and overpriced, or the decor was not to his liking? His comment could apply to many businesses that are shadows of their former selves, which is common when the passion of owner-managers departs. He said, we also need to be careful that we don't make it too difficult for other businesses to trade from the city centre, so that may mean the council looking again at its policies to create powers to protect businesses from being pushed out. To me, the horse bolted long ago. It's not like Winchester is going to get its butchers, bakers, fishmongers, delis back. Property's too expensive and competition fierce. The supermarkets put paid to that, as did the county council's policy on the market, which Cadogan and James blamed in part for their demise. Councillors need to keep their noses out. Let supply and demand dictate and let evolution continue. Internet retailing is changing high streets, and some folk do not comprehend how fast smartphones alone have moved online transactions. Internet trading was an argument that caused question marks about the viability of so much retail space within Silver Hill. If retail and retailers are so important, can our councillors spend time instead on the disaster that is the Brooks? There are massive amounts of retail space available. Jonathan Greatrix, City Road, Winchester.
Well, thank you everyone for those. Some very strong opinions. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And next we have editorial comment, followed by Westminster Diary and Belgarum. Can we start with you, please, Claire?
So this is the editorial comment. Winchester... Winchester is about to embark on a public consultation over the regeneration of Central Winchester, better known as Silver Hill. Most readers are familiar with the collapse of the scheme last year, after the City Council lost patience with the developers' changes to the £150 million scheme. Now is a chance for a fresh start, which hopefully will lead to a set of proposals that will broadly find favour in public, even if anonymity is impossible. We would urge everyone to get involved with the council's efforts to ask the public what they want to see from the development. But we have our doubts. There does seem to be an irreconcilable gap between the view of many Wintonians that the previous scheme was too big, and the City Council and potential developers, who will argue that whatever is proposed must be profitable enough to be economically viable. The Council has made a good start by employing JTP architects who have a track record in placemaking, involving people in developing places with a human heart. The main issue seems to be how to include the high level of car parking. Those with long memories will recall previous developer Mike Capocci insisting the flats at Silver Hill would have limited parking. There is no definite reason why the new scheme should have so much. We will see.
The next topic is Westminster Diary, and I have a letter from Westminster from our MP, Steve Ryan. The turn of the year saw widespread coverage of the winter pressures facing our NHS. It was therefore handy that early January saw my third Ask the NHS public meeting in Winchester. The Chronicle attended and was spot on in its coverage, reporting, quote, no change is not an option, unquote. However, I am clear it must be evidence-based change that is focused on getting my constituents world-class treatment when they're very sick, hence the need for the new critical treatment hospital, while recognising it's not all about hospital care, and it's certainly not all about money. Before some exhale from that gasp of breath, let me clarify. Over the last decade, NHS net expenditure has increased from £75 billion to £117 billion. That's a 56% increase. If money were the sole solution, we'd have NHS productivity outperforming the best health systems in the world, and even Channel 4 News running stories featuring happy patients. Before the last election, NHS England published its plan for the service and challenged the two main parties to fund it. We are committed to securing high-quality, free healthcare for all, which is why we are giving the NHS in England the funding it said was needed, with an additional £10 billion by 2020. So the money is there, but it must go hand in hand with new models of care, and that's why the service and transformation plans are important. At my meeting, we had a sensible, sober discussion about access to GPs, how we manage long-term chronic illnesses, and the role public health should play in keeping people out of the most expensive hospital care. Health policy is complicated. It cannot be tweeted in 140 characters, and nor should it be. Our local trust is experiencing unprecedented demand on its services, but this is not simply about an increase in numbers of those attending A&E. The issue is far more complex, in that those who attend are sicker, often elderly and frail, with complex and multiple long-term conditions, meaning they need to be admitted. This complexity continues when they are medically fit to be discharged, but not able to safely enter the social care system. Getting the right packages of care in place takes time and compounds the challenge for our hospitals. That is why a strong and intact Hampshire County is so important, and they are right to levy the 2% social care precept this year to ease the financial pressure. Finally, I was pleased to see the Prime Minister talk about the mental health challenge facing our children and young people. As a constituency MP, I hear for myself how these challenges can develop from a very young age, so new support for every secondary school to increase awareness around mental health must be right.
And Belgarum has six separate photographs of coffee shops. And it says, so where have you been, B-E-A-N? The rise of the coffee shop in Winchester can clearly be seen by the selection of cafes between the two statues, the man on the horse and King Alfred, a distance of little more than a quarter of a mile. In a few hundred yards, the caffeine lover can indulge their fancy at high street chains and independently owned ones. The photos do not include those on Jewry Street or back streets such as Coffee Lab on St Thomas Street.
And now moving on to historical items, starting with news from 200 years ago.
This was January the 27th, 1817, the Rights of Man. The important question of reform has at length assumed a form and character that irresistibly force it on the attention of Parliament. The principles recognised by the Common Council seem generally to be triennial elections, and the extension of the elective franchise to all freeholders, copyholders, and householders paying taxes. But they did not proceed so far as to dictate terms to Parliament. One party, including Messrs. Cobbett and Hunt, advocates universal suffrage and annual parliaments, while another desires that only freeholders, copyholders, and housekeepers should exercise the right of voting. And the second paragraph, rioting over oats. On Saturday, there was a tumult at Dumfries. There was a short supply of oatmeal in the market, while the people who wanted to buy saw large quantities shipping to be sent elsewhere. The mob instantly seized several cartloads and carried them to the market. They also seized a quantity found on the quay and at the mills in the neighbourhood, which they also brought to the market, where some was sold to those who wished to purchase. The magistrates swore in a number of constables. Order was restored, but not till the militia had charged the mob.
The next topic is from 100 years ago, January the 27th, 1917. The first paragraph is called Huns Teetering. The Earl of Selborne, as president of the Alton Constitutional Club, speaking last night at the annual general meeting, said that Germany now recognised that she could not achieve in this war the whole of her objects, and her policy was to endeavour to cajole the Allies, with the help of neutrals, to make an inconclusive peace. That was the worst legacy we could possibly leave to our descendants. The whole of our gigantic sacrifices of life and treasure would be thrown away if we allowed Germany to consolidate herself in the position she had won, for she would surely renew the conflict at a future time in a far stronger position. Second paragraph is entitled Paltry War Pay. It seems to me that we have somewhat forgotten the claims of our fighting men to share in the war bonuses that are now so prevalent in many portions of our country. Let us take the case of married soldiers. Their pay as privates is 1 shilling per day. This sum is halved by the state deducting sixpence, 6 old pence, per day out of the soldier's pay, which said sixpence go towards the separation allowance. The soldier then has a nominal sum of sixpence per day as his share. If our private invests in a modest pint of ale or beer each day, it will cost him at a public house not less than threepence halfpenny.
And there are two items from 50 years ago, January the 28th, 1967. 11 plus D-Day. Wednesday was 11 plus day in the primary schools of Hampshire when just over 8,000 youngsters sought to establish their claim for a place in grammar or secondary modern schools. They were, however, but 63% of the total of 12,722 eligible to sit by virtue of their age, and 4,714 withdrew from the selection process and elected for the modern schools by agreement with headmasters and parents. This follows the pattern of recent years, when about a third of the age group has opted out. But they are the first children who will all spend a full 5 years in secondary schools. The school leaving age is due to be raised to 16 in the year 1970 to 71. And the second item is titled Recreation Problems. Winchester Rugby Football Club's eight-year fruitless search for its own ground, the lack of the basic amenity of a children's playground at Hairstock, and the threat of a new road taking part of New Alresford Golf Club were mentioned in the House of Commons on Monday, when Winchester's MP, Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, speaking in the adjournment debate, asked for a government promise to make land available for recreational uses. Admiral Morgan Giles said there was little party controversy on the subject. It was recognised there was a need for more land for recreation as a rapidly increasing population were acquiring greater leisure time.
And 25 years ago, January the 24th, 1992, poll tax anger. Hundreds of furious poll taxpayers jammed telephone lines to Eastleigh Council's civic offices last week after receiving summonses to appear in court for non-payment. The local authority is still struggling in the aftermath of £2 million losses by its contract services wing, confirmed on Friday that has sent out nearly 7,000 summonses. Some callers claimed they'd received summonses already, although they'd paid up. But at the civic offices, the council was sticking to its guns. All summonses issued have been subject to reminder notices and the proper procedures have been followed, said a spokesman. And secondly, green survey. Winchester Friends of the Earth will be conducting a survey of energy-wasting fridges and freezers tomorrow. It's part of a national campaign to persuade the government to back tough compulsory standards of energy efficiency for all domestic electrical goods. Fridges, cookers, washing machines and other domestic appliances account, says the pressure group, for 21% of the UK's annual electricity use. At present, some appliances use electricity far more efficiently than others. Winchester Friends of the Earth spokesman Mike Hulford said, generating electricity causes serious environmental damage by contributing towards acid rain, the build-up of radioactive waste, and the threat of climate change.
Thank you, everyone. That finishes our regular features for this week. So let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. At the Theatre Royal, the Olivier Award-winning comedy Hysteria will run from Thursday the 9th to Saturday the 11th of February. Performances start at 7:30pm with a Saturday matinee at 2:30pm. You can ring the box office on 01962 840440. That's 01962 840440. And at the Discovery Centre, Winchester, the Gallows Theatre presents Seven Santas on Friday the 3rd and Saturday the 4th of February at 7:30. Tickets can be booked on 01962 873 603. 01962 873 603. On Saturday, January the 28th, Hampshire Music Service are holding a New Year concert in Winchester Cathedral Nave at 7:30pm. Tickets are available from the Cathedral Box Office 01962 857 275. And on Saturday the 4th of February there will be a Jane Austen tour between 10 and 11am. The tour, which shows her links with the cathedral and Inner Close, is followed by a hot drink and cake in the refectory. Tickets cost £12.50 with a 75p booking fee and are available from the cathedral box office. Before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 27th of January at 7:49 a.m. and begins at 4:48 p.m. On Wednesday the 1st of February, it ends at 7:42 a.m. and begins at 4:56 p.m. And so, on to items of general news, and Claire starting us off, please.
This is entitled Apology as Lorry Damages 15 Cars. A lorry which belongs to a firm near Winchester has been pictured smashing into parked cars on a narrow residential road. It caused damage estimated at thousands of pounds to vehicles parked on both sides of a London street. The lorry belongs to Hampshire Insulation, a firm based in Thompson's Lane, close to Marwell Zoo at Coldon Common. The incident happened in Ruislip, West London, and was captured by Holly Ann Cooper, who posted the pictures on Facebook. Holly, who was parked nearby, said the driver got halfway down the road, hitting vehicles before he started to reverse and hit more as he came back. Her post quickly went viral and has been shared more than 13,000 times. She said that the lorry had struck around 15 cars. Ms. Cooper said, "I couldn't believe it when I saw what was happening. I couldn't believe it. He was still driving down the road. It was shocking. I knew he wouldn't be able to fit down the road, so I watched him as I was worried about my car. Suddenly, he was hitting cars, alarms were going off, and he knocked a wing mirror off. He dragged the Fiat 500 down the road. It was carnage. All the cars were completely smashed up. It was terrible." Hampshire Insulations has apologised to anyone whose car was damaged in the incident. A statement from Hampshire Insulations said, "Upon notification of an incident involving ours and multiple other vehicles on Monday, January the 16th, we made contact with the Metropolitan Police to register the incident. The driver of the vehicle has provided a written statement to the Metropolitan Police within 24 hours as required. Our insurance company will be dealing with the claims relating to this incident. May we take this opportunity to offer our sincere apologies to those who have suffered damage in their vehicles or have been inconvenienced by this incident. It was unclear whether any disciplinary action was taken against the driver, who has not been named."
This next topic is possibly not unrelated to the topic you've just heard about, and is a seasonal warning entitled 500 Arrests Over Christmas. More than 500 drivers were arrested over Christmas as part of a crackdown on drink and drug drivers. The campaign was a joint operation between Hampshire and Thames Valley forces. In Thames Valley, 300 arrests were made, 325 the previous year, while in Hampshire the figure was 222, 215 last year. This year also saw an increase of 63% in the number of arrests, 80, for drug driving across both areas. Henry Parsons, Roads Policing Chief Inspector for Hampshire Constabulary and Thames Valley Police, said, "It's disappointing that we continue to find so many people drink driving. The effects of it are so dangerous and it's really not worth the risk. There is no excuse for it. These figures show that we remain committed to targeting those who cause death on our roads and make the roads less safer than they should be." After the campaign, a man from Southampton was banned from driving for 36 months after drinking a bottle of vodka before driving erratically on the M3.
Oh. Outrage over councillor's New Forest fence proposal. One of Hampshire's top politicians has sparked outrage by calling for thousands of free-roaming animals in the New Forest to be fenced in. The controversial proposal for partition, been put forward by Councillor Ken Thornburgh, former leader of Hampshire County Council, who said action was needed to cut the number of animal accidents. But the idea of fences springing up across the district has caused widespread anger and dismay, even among animal owners. Critics said barriers would destroy the character of the forest, as well as interfering with the movement of stock, one of the main reasons for which the area is famous. The largest tract of unenclosed land in the south, it's largely freely roamed by thousands of ponies, cows and donkeys. Graham Ferris, chairman of the Commoners Defence Association, which represents animal owners, said, "We'd be totally opposed to fences. It would cause a massive change in the way the forest is managed and grazed, causing all sorts of impossible to predict consequences. At the moment, we have a free-ranging, semi-feral herd of ponies that keep the forest looking the way it does. Fences would divide it into little blocks of land, creating small farm-like populations." Sue Westwood, clerk to the New Forest Verdurers, added, "I think it's a non-starter. Fences would completely change the look of the forest and the financial cost would be phenomenal. You need underpasses to facilitate the free movement of stock, plus extra cattle grids on side roads, and they cost at least £60,000 each." Mr. Westwood added that the forest was common land, which meant that the construction of fences would require an Act of Parliament. But Councillor Thornborough's call for fencing was supported by Michael Cooper, a former chairman of the Commoners Defence Association. Listing some of the attempts to cut the number of animal accidents, he said, "None has worked effectively, and I've reluctantly come to the conclusion that some roads need to be fenced. I don't say that with any great joy. It would partition the forest and subways would be very expensive." He added, "We can't allow the carnage to continue for much longer. The time is right. But whether there's enough money in the pot is another question." Councillor Thornborough made his fencing suggestion during a debate about animal accidents. He told fellow members of the National Park Authority that the current 40-mile-an-hour speed limit on all unfenced roads in the district should be cut.
"Move the Royal," says ex-mayor. A former mayor has suggested that the major Winchester theatre should move. City councillor Eileen Berry believes that the Theatre Royal in Drury Street could relocate to a bigger venue. However, Ian Steele, whose grandfather twice saved the theatre, said he would be reluctant for it to move, but said that the theatre is looking at future expansion. Councillor Berry monitors the Live Theatre Winchester Trust, and her thoughts were in a report to the Overview and Scrutiny Committee at Winchester City Council. She said the Theatre Royal struggles to compete with the likes of the Mayflower in Southampton and the Anvil in Basingstoke, and suggested it should move to the River Park Leisure Centre site in nearby Hyde. Speaking to the Chronicle after the meeting, Councillor Berry said she would like to see the theatre have the same sort of offer as at bigger theatres in Hampshire. Councillor Berry said, "I'm thinking of a venue that could take every conceivable show. There is the Mayflower in Southampton that's doing very well and has more than 800 seats. I went there to see a show which also incorporates supper and the food. At the Mayflower, I saw a show and had supper, and the ambience of the service was tip-top. It was all pre-booked and pre-done. You can't do that because you really only get a 10% discount on the food at bars and restaurants along Drury Street. We do not seem to incorporate that sort of thing. People will say I'm thinking out of the box and being too ambitious, but if we do not think out of the box, nothing would progress at all. Theatre bosses downplayed moving to another venue, but said they are actively looking at increasing the capacity of the venue. President of Winchester Musicals and Opera Society, Ian Steele, who sits on the board of the Theatre Royal Trust, said, I do understand that maybe a bespoke centre could go into the River Park site. There is a potential idea to gain us another 40 to 50 seats here, and that is something that Chief Executive Derek Newland is going to advise further. It would be a shame for a move away because of the beauty of our theatre added Mr. Steele.
I have an item here for those people keeping livestock, entitled Dog Terrorises Alpaca's Herd. A herd of alpacas were terrorised by a dog. Police are investigating the incident which happened at the Hensting Alpaca Sanctuary in Oslebury. It comes 3 years after 76 chickens were killed and three alpacas seriously hurt when they were killed by two runaway Labradors. This time, a black Labrador was seen swimming across the River Itchen and running into the field and frightening the animals by running and jumping at them. It is not known whether it bit any. Two of the female alpacas, which were pregnant and were attacked, had severe shock, according to owner Derek Moore. Mr. Moore said, two of the heavily pregnant females were in shock, and another of the alpacas was limping on its back foot. It is a nightmare. It is quite common, though, but the good thing is now there's more enforcement on this. One eyewitness said she saw the dog swim across the river and then run at the alpacas. However, she said she actually attacked any. It is understood that a woman in a pink coat was with the dog, and she frantically tried to call out of the out-of-control dog back. Eyewitness Polly Perry said, I saw a lady walking with her dog, and her black Labrador swam across the river to chase around a field of alpacas. It lasted about 15 minutes, and the owner was trying to call her dog back. It was jumping up at them, and it looked like it wanted to play, but then it looked like it wanted to bite them. The alpacas were running and trying to escape. The owner was mortified and screaming at the dog to come back. The other lady that was running along said to her, this is unacceptable behaviour. You need to get that dog back. You need to run down that track into the field. She said it appeared that the alpacas had been herded into an area of the field before the dog ran back to its owner. She said, I am glad none of the alpacas were killed. I felt so sorry for them. They are stuck over there. And if someone attacks them, it is a shame that they are in that situation where dogs can get across the river. A police spokesman said, we received a report on January the 15th about an alpaca being injured following a dog attack at Branbridge Park Garden Centre in Kiln Lane. The incident happened between 11 a.m. and 11:15 a.m. Anyone with information is asked to contact us on 101, quoting 441 700 17801.
I fear for safety of all in prisons, says ex-officer. A former Winchester prison officer has spoken out about how it's being affected by cuts to staff. Chris Muzzle, 56, from Eastleigh, has written a book of his experiences working as a prison officer from 1983 to 2014. He took an early retirement offer and decided to get officers to tell their stories about their work. Chris published Screws Prison Staff in Conversation, which has sold more than 400 copies. He began his career at Feltham Youth Custody in 1983 before working at several London prisons, and then spent 13 years of his 30-year service at Winchester, specialising as a healthcare officer. He said, the camaraderie found amongst staff can be found elsewhere amongst members of the services who recognise battle fatigue. He said the biggest problem facing Winchester Prison and others around the country is the lack of staff following cutbacks. I've been out of the service for a couple of years now, but keep in touch with many still serving. Before I left, there was a huge cut in frontline staff, and that continues today, he said. Where there were once five or six officers on a wing of 150 inmates, there are now only two officers. It's becoming very dangerous for staff and inmates, with assaults rising year on year. The rise of new drugs such as spice, a drug which can turn the user psychotic, means the danger to all is heightened. It appears that the long-term plan of both current and the last government of cutting staff has been a very dangerous one. I fear for the safety of all in prisons at this time. The current prisons minister has promised 2,500 more staff, but the problem is that with recruitment and training taken into account, it would take a year to 18 months to get those staff into place. A Ministry of Justice spokesperson said, "We are committed to transforming prisons into places of safety and reform, and we've announced a major overhaul of the prison system, including 2,500 extra frontline officers." Chris's book can be bought on PayPal on screws99, lowercase, screws99@hotmail.com.
7,500 pounds for hospice by Masons. Naomi House and Jack's Place has received a donation of 7,500 pounds from the Freemasons. The provincial Grand Master, Mike Wilkes, presented a cheque during a visit to the Sutton Scotney based charity that the Masons have supported since it opened. He was accompanied by fellow Mason David Hilton, and the money was raised by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Provincial Grand Steward's Lodge. Naomi House and Jack's Place care for more than 340 life-limited and life-threatened children, young people and their extended families from across the South. Later this year, the charity will open the world's first hospice long-term ventilation LTV unit. It will comprise two fully equipped children's bedrooms, an emergency care room, high-quality accommodation for families, and communal spaces for play and relaxation. Paul Morgan, head of fundraising for Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "The support we receive from Masonic lodges locally is hugely important to us. We are indebted to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Provincial Grand Steward's Lodge for the support they have shown to local children, young people and families." As an illustration, £7,500 could fund ongoing counselling and bereavement support for two families who have lost a child. Mr. Wilkes said, "The work of this charity, which provides care and support for life-limited and life-threatened children and their families, is dear to the hearts of all Freemasons. We have been supporting the charity since it was started at Naomi House 22 years ago."
And now for something for those people fed up in this cold snap, entitled Beach Fundraiser. An indoor beach is coming to Winchester to raise money for charity. Golden sands and inflatable palm trees will appear at the Rising Sun pub on Bridge Street as part of a charity initiative this weekend. The pub is raising money for the Twins and Multiple Births Association, brackets TAMBA, whose big research appeal needs to raise at least £60,000 over the next few years. The event includes a disco and professional photo shoots by Disguise in Audio on the beach on the Saturday from 6 p.m. till 10 p.m. For the whole of February, the beach will also be open on Fridays and Saturdays for parties with live DJs. Organiser Rob Plunton said, "My wife and I recently travelled abroad to have a successful treatment of IVF, and we are now pregnant with twins, which is how we came across the charity TAMBA. We have seen how much they help people and how much this money will help with their research."
Back down to earth. Car theft not a priority, say police. Car thefts in and around Winchester are not a priority, according to a police chief. It comes after the Chronicle reported how thefts had skyrocketed in November last year, with a rising car crime of more than 1,100%. One victim, Barbara Raymond, had a charity collection bucket stolen in November. Chief Inspector Claire Taylor told councillors at an overview and scrutiny committee that the increase was the work of two offenders. Police say, however, although they are alarmed by the rise, their strategy, which affects resources, has changed. Ms. Taylor said, "Theft from motor vehicles have had an alarming rise we are fully aware of, which has been committed. theft from motor vehicles have had an alarming rise. We are fully aware. We are confident who the offender is. It's the same offender on both accounts, and an individual admitted 38 offences and further offences in a second instance. Our response to vehicle crime has changed because it is not identified in our control strategy. She added that police won't always attend a theft from motor vehicle, and depending on patrols, they have to rely on getting lucky to catch offenders. Ms. Taylor admitted there's been a big increase in car crime from city areas, admitted that the recent rise is not acceptable. She added, it's not acceptable for the community to suffer that. We need to know who is committing that, and then we will refine and open it up as a series of thefts. In a statement to the Chronicle after the meeting, she clarified her comments about the crime strategy. Our control strategy focuses on protecting vulnerable people against crimes such as serious sexual offences and domestic abuse. However, we will continue to address local issues such as vehicle crime and prioritise our resources as appropriate. We've conducted various covert operations to identify vehicle offenders and therefore reduce offences. There were a couple of spikes in vehicle crime, and we've arrested two men in connection with a range of offences. We continue to urge the local community to be vigilant and report any suspicious activity. If you think there is a crime in action, call us on 999. If you have information about previous incidents or who you think might be involved, contact us on 101. City Councillor Jan Warwick, the new portfolio holder for transport, said, residents should be assured that vast majority of the council's car parks are park mark approved, meaning they conform to the very highest standards of safety, including lighting and CCTV.
This is about Wedgwood items from dinner set up for auction. Dukes are delighted to have discovered some important items from an historic and significant dinner service to be included in their upcoming sale of ceramics and glass with an impeccable provenance. The pieces, comprising an imposing tureen, plates and a pair of elegant wine coolers, was made by Wedgwood in Staffordshire about 250 years ago. The pieces are still brightly decorated and emblazoned with the then newly established coat of arms of the Blake Baronet. The lots are set to sell for between £5,000 and £10,000, but have already seen considerable interest from trade and private buyers, and Dukes are expecting competitive bidding. Porcelain was known as white gold in the 18th century due to its rarity and popularity in the English home. Fine ceramics, such as creamware, were only produced in England from around 1740 by potters in Staffordshire. This novelty factor, combined with Josiah Wedgwood's continuous improvement of the earthenware into a refined ceramic, garnered much fame and acclaim to his creamware products. Creamware became so desirable that it graced almost every table in the land, from modest middle-class homes, ornamental tables in mansions in the country, and Queen Charlotte's tea table. The impressive pieces coming up for sale at Duke's were evidently a pricey and lavish commission, as shown by the vibrant and detailed decoration of the pieces with a coat of arms and lively red, purple and tropical green colouring and adornments. The coat of arms sports a sleek lion passant, gardon, leopard walking with its head turned, across the above the motto Confido in Probitate, meaning trust in honesty, further decorated with flourishing palm leaves, possibly a nod to the Blake's family exotic heritage and profitable estates in St. Kitts.
The next item is entitled Historical Autographs Are Sold for £36,000. A collection of more than 1,000 signatures from famous historical figures from the past five centuries, including Charles Dickens, Sir Winston Churchill and the Duke of Wellington, has fetched a total hammer price of £36,065 at auction. John Evans amassed the collection, which also included the signatures of Rudyard Kipling, William Wordsworth and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle over a period of 50 years up until his death, aged 90, in 2007. The earliest signature was from the first Duke of Marlborough from 1697, and one of the most interesting signatures is that of Charles Dickens on a Coutts £35 cheque for a piece of silver in 1861. Most former Prime Ministers, from Robert Walpole to Sir Winston Churchill through to Tony Blair, have their signatures featured in either bound albums or signed books, as well as ex-Soviet statesman Mikhail Gorbachev. And the collection, which auctioneers described as breathtaking, also features photographs taken, signed by the first men to land on the moon, including Buzz Aldrin. A picture signed by Neil Armstrong fetched £2,585, including buyer's premium, alone. Passionate about politics, Mr. Evans from Worthing, West Sussex, was a former magician turned anti-vivisection campaigner who gathered some of the signatures personally from encounters with famous faces. The collection faced a total hammer price of £36,000 and £42,000, including buyer's premium, during a 100% sale at Campbell's Auctioneers of Worthing. Auctioneer Paul Campbell said, "It's been such a privilege to turn the pages of one man's life and passion and to see and consider the history he brought together. I was so pleased to see such competitive bidding."
Cash for causes. Charities and groups in the Winchester district are set to benefit from the city's annual Bonfire Night fundraiser. Winchester Roundtable are looking to help causes in and around the city with funds raised from last year's event on November the 5th. The event at North Walls Park attracted thousands of people and raised around £50,000. Cash for Causes, run by the group, works by dividing the money raised from Winchester annual Firework Night and distributing it among several worthy causes over two periods of 12 weeks in the autumn and spring. The organisations are looking for applications for grants of up to £2,500, which should be received by the end of February. Email, and all lowercase as usual, communityservice@winchesterroundtable.co.uk. Community service, all one word, at, and then Winchester Roundtable, all one word, .co.uk.
Thanks very much, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. Again, thanks to our editors, Liz and Gordon Legg, also to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And many thanks to our readers, Richard.
Bye.
Claire.
Bye.
And Peter.
Bye.
And goodbye from me, Maria. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you have finished with it, and return it to us as soon as possible.